I'm Denise, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Denise. We love you, Denise. Lots and lots and lots.
You guys got my heart just racing. Okay, yay! Just gonna, like, my main pitch was to get you excited about being here. And I think you got that covered. Wow. This is really exciting. And I'm really grateful to be here. I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous and feeling really emotional today. And yeah, so. Wow, I'm nervous too, and I see a lot of people that I just love. I just love you all, and I'm just so grateful we're all here and we're sober today. You know, that's a really big deal for all of us, and I know that. I wanted to thank the panel for inviting me, the board, and I just know these guys have worked really hard all year. A lot of people in the audience, too, have worked very hard all year to put this together. And I think they deserve a real big hand. I made it to Alcoholics Anonymous on October 17th, 1988. And, yeah, it was a very good day. It really was. And my first meeting, I was told I never had to drink or drug again. And that has been my truth since that day. And so I'm standing here with over like 23 years of sobriety or something, which is just crazy and awesome and just wonderful. And yeah, I'm just so grateful and a little nervous. And I didn't really even know what all I wanted to share. I wanted to share about my first few weeks of sobriety. I sobered up in Southern California. That's where I was born and raised, and in Orange County. And it was good sobriety. Yeah, really good program out there. And so I went to Cocaine Anonymous meetings. It was one of my first meetings, actually. It was a Saturday. I sobered up on a Monday, and by Saturday night, I was at a Cocaine Anonymous meeting, and there was a Cocaine Anonymous convention in San Diego coming up Halloween weekend, so 2 weeks. And one of the girls that were going with the friend that I called for help and took me to my first AA meeting had canceled. She couldn't make the trip. And so I was invited to go along, and I didn't have any money. You know, I was like 7 days sober, six maybe, I don't know. And I had no money. I had really not much at all. And a friend said, I will pay for your trip, and you can pay me back when you get 90 days. And so I went. So I had 2 weeks sober, and I tried to go to this four-step panel at the convention because I had already found out, I had already realized after sitting in these meetings that I needed to do my fourth and fifth step if I was going to be sober. And yeah, so I went to this four-step panel, and there was a guy up there running the whole thing and had us do our columns and write our resentments and our fears and everything. And then he paired us all up, and we were supposed to share it and do our fifth step. And the guy I was paired up with, we were fighting over who was going to go first. And I said, no, you go. And he said, no, you. And I said, no, I'm not going to go first. And he said, well, I didn't do my four step. So I ran out crying. I ran out crying. And I sat out on the curb, and I was just crying. And this guy walks up and he goes, what are you doing? You know, are you okay? And I said, I couldn't do my fifth step. And he said, how long have you been sober? And I said, 14 days. And he said, oh, yeah, you just need to have some fun. Like, that's what these are for, is just to realize that you can have fun in sobriety, you know. And so just try that on for a size and wait on that fourth and fifth step. And oh, it just, you know, got me off the hook, and I just felt so much better. And so I just tried to, you know, have fun and be comfortable in my own skin. Yeah, because, gosh, I don't know if, I don't remember being comfortable. I really don't. I had to have been born comfortable. I don't know. But it didn't seem shortly after that I remember being very comfortable. And I needed medicine, you know, drugs and alcohol. They were like my medicine to help me be comfortable. And I didn't think right. I really didn't from very early on, you know. And I really have come to believe, especially this last year or so, that alcoholism, it is a disease of self-destruction. You know, I've read that in the 12 and 12. It talks about that. But it has a lot to do, you know, like they say that alcohol is just a symptom of our disease, right? And, you know, because just my thinking got me in trouble. And it kind of, you know, destroyed my relations and just my perception and the way I thought about things. And I was remembering, like, being 14, my cousin was getting married, and she, her groom had more guys than she had girls. Right, and so she needed another girl in the wedding party, and so that ended up being me. And I remember like being really resentful that she just needed me, and that's why I was up there. And I was 14, and just to like have an attitude like that, I don't know where that came from. And then what I really remember is the keg at the reception. And the bride's dad having to shoo me away from that keg, like the whole reception, you know? It was like his daughter's getting married and he's worried about his niece that will not get off of that keg. And being so mad at him, like, go do your thing and leave me alone, you know? I'm all right. And thinking, you know, I don't know. And just thinking, I was just this little girl. I was just a little girl. And wow, but I needed that. And I needed it to feel okay. And I loved marijuana a lot. And I really did, you know. And my nickname was Weed. It was. Loved it. And it really was harder to quit than everything else, you know. And it was harder to really see the unmanageability of it, you know. But I remember at 19, I had this car. I had a Gremlin. We're going all the way back to the 80s, you guys. So, anyway, oh my gosh. So, yes, I had a Gremlin. My folks, they gave it to me, and I remember them going to get a new car, and they were thinking about trading it in or not, and if they didn't, I would have to drive it around. And I remember at 16, okay, I'm being given a car, and thinking, please don't, you know, I don't want that Gremlin. And and I remember they went to get the new car, and they pulled up in that Gremlin too, and I thought, shit, man. And I was driving that thing around, and I really had to drink to drive that. I really did. I did. It was like this baby blue, you know, with a dark blue pinstripe, racing stripe, and you know what's really funny is I wish I had that car today. I really do. It got like 32 miles to a gallon, and it was fucking fast. It was really fast. But it, and you know, and I drove it. I drove it for years and years and years. I did. To where, like, I bent that, you know, back axle, and I'd be driving, and people would, like, pull me, you know, like, wave me down and say, hey, you know, your back tire, it's going to come off. And I go, it's cool, you know. It's all right. It's just a bent axle, man. And it was okay, you know. I just had to change that tire more than the others. It's all right. It's all right. I don't know. I didn't think right. And you know, when I did my fourth step and my fifth step, I wrote about that Gremlin. I did. And my sponsor was like, why didn't you trade it in and get something you wanted? And I'm like, oh, that never occurred to me. It never occurred to me. It just never occurred to me. And that's how I thought. I didn't think right at all. I didn't. And So I drove that thing around a lot. And anyway, so yeah, when I was 19, I took it in, Pep Boys, one morning, first thing in the morning, to get new tires. And so I was waiting for it to get, worked on, and I was in the lobby, and this girl brought her car in, and she got on the phone in the lobby and was making all these calls and getting all upset because nobody was there. And she turned to me and she said, "Do you want to go next door and get a drink?" And I said, "I don't have any money." And she goes, "I have plenty." And I said, "Right on." So yeah. So we went next door to the Mexican restaurant. And yeah, and she said, "Hey, have you ever had peppermint schnapps?" And I said, "No, I never have." "Oh, you'll love it." So we had a shot. And then the guy at the bar, he sent over a shot for us. And then the bartender sent over a shot. And it was 10 o'clock in the morning. It was like, oh no. And so we sat over there for a few hours. And we decided, oh yeah, our cars. Yeah. So we went back to get our cars. And I don't remember really what they did wrong, but we found something wrong with our cars. And I remember the manager taking us into the back room and saying, "If you ladies don't take your cars and get off my property, I will have to call the police." And so we did. And I was going to just go home, you know, and do my Saturday night with my friends. And she's like, "No, no, come on with me. You know, we'll go. I know this great bar." She said, "But first I have to get my muffler fixed." And she said, "It's just down the street. Just follow me." And I actually, I followed her down Beach Boulevard, and she pulled into this muffler place, and I actually rear-ended her pulling into the muffler place, and thinking, "God, I really need to go home, you know." But this disease, man, it's like I couldn't. So I waited for her. Everything in me said, "Go home," and I couldn't. And so then we made it to that bar, and we drank all evening, shooting pool, and I just remember lots and lots of pitchers of beer and going out and smoking my favorite thing and thinking, "Gosh, I'm gonna miss the party tonight, you know, with my friends and stuff." And and finally taking off, you know. And the next thing, I was being woken up by the Huntington Beach police. I was on the front seat of that gremlin in a planter in the McDonald Douglas parking lot. I don't know how that happened. But the security guard had found me. He couldn't wake me up. And I had an alcohol level of 0.32. And so I was really, yeah, drunk. And and my boyfriend and my brother both had been beat up really badly by police in the past. And so that's all I was afraid of, was that they were going to beat me up. And I just remember that, just crying, "Please don't hurt me, don't hurt me," you know. And they assured me they wouldn't, and they didn't. And they took me in to the, you know, drunk tank. And remember, there's an old lady in there. Now, I just passed out. I gave her my blood, and I just passed out. But when I woke up, it was a problem. It was a real problem, because now I'm locked up, and I want out. I got to get out of here now. And being scolded by the drunks, you know, in the drunk tank, it was really kind of interesting when I look back, you know. And I guess I told them my name, because they were even, you know, telling me to shut up by my name. And and calling my friend and asking her to come get me, and you know, and then they had to wait a couple hours, and she was all mad, and you know, I don't know. I was 19, and I had to drink, 8 more years, I guess, you know, that last year. You know, it just was crazy. Yeah, everything was really hard. Everybody sucked. You know, if things were different, if I didn't have the childhood I had, it was just vicious, awful, terrible. And God, it was bad. It was really bad. And and I remember trying to go on counseling, you know, and drink while I was drinking, and I couldn't go to the sessions without being stoned, or just come home and just get so plowed, you know, and just think, "Ooh, I can't do that, man. I look at how much it messes me up, you know. I was better without that counseling." It wasn't until, I'm telling you, man. We just don't think right. We just don't think right. And it's like, it's a trip. I mean, today I get here and I see Vaughn. I love Vaughn. Isn't Vaughn just the best? I was able to hear him speak on a Friday night podium one night. I was just so impressed with his story and how far he's come and how much service work he does and how much I know that saves our life and makes a difference in our sobriety. And Anyway, I saw him in the lobby, and this is how crazy, even after all these years, I see him, and I think, hey, Vaughn, you know, hug, and he goes on, I go on, and I'm thinking, he wishes he asked somebody else to speak tonight, and know it. It's like, what? Like, hey, I don't know what happens to my head, I don't know. So I just, oh, man. So, anyway, if you're new, just keep coming back, you know, and just be easy on yourselves, you guys. It's really easy. I know people said that to me, but it didn't mean what it means to me today. Like, just be really easy on yourself, you know, and when my head today, it tells me stupid things about myself or even you, you know, I'm just like, wow, that's interesting, you know, I just let it keep going, you know, because like there was a time when I tried to just say, shut up, you know, and then it gets louder. I don't know if you've had that experience, but then it just gets louder. And, wow. I can't believe we're all here and we're sober. I'm just really, that just amazes me. And, I have to tell you, my brother, he came out here to sober up 1 year, 2001, I think it was, and I picked him up at the Greyhound station. And he's my little brother, but he's just 10 years younger, so this was, what, 10 years ago. So he was 30, but he was, you know, he's my little brother. And I picked him up at the Greyhound station, my husband then, and I hugged him, and he had lost so much weight, for he was on heroin, speedballs, like that. So like when I went to hug him, you know, I could feel every ridge in his spine, every ridge, yeah. And anyway, I was just so grateful he had came, and we got him in the Foundation House here. And we took him over to the Foundation House, and we heard that the Wacky Paw was going on at Mormon Lake the next day. Yeah, Askipon, was it? I'm not sure. 2001, you guys remember? Anyway, it was wacky. You guys are wacky, man. I'm telling you. It was like, wow, the energy. And it's great. It's so great. And it was so great. And so this he was the newest newcomer. And he got the big book when you guys all had the countdown. My brother, my baby brother. And he looks at me and he says, do I have to go up there and get it, you know? And I said, yeah, and you'll be all right. You'll be all right, you know? And he came up to the stage here and he received the signed big book that we do, you know, as the newest newcomer back then. And I remember just crying and just the joy and the peace that he was going to be okay today, you know, and that there's no way he's not touched by all the love in that room, right? And there's just no way. You come in, you know, you're changed. Just it's how it was for me. Like, I found AA to be the best medicine around. Yeah, just that love and tolerance that is our code, yeah? That's it. And it's been the best medicine. And then since I've been here, I've been able to, you know, do the counseling and sort the stuff out that happened and see how it affected me and how I can think differently about myself and about others, you know. But it wasn't real easy when I first came in. Like, it was, like I was saying, I was an alcoholic. That was easy. I used to drink to be an alky, you know, but I didn't know I had a disease, a fatal disease that I could die from. I had no idea. And I mean, I didn't know until I made it in here how close I was to a coma that day, that night, that security guard couldn't wake me, you know? I was on my way. That man saved my life, I bet. So, I was so relieved when I found out that I had a disease and that I could get some help. And I started working the steps. I went into a recovery home. I had been living with my big brother and his wife. And my big brother, he was pretty crazy then. He was doing the meth stuff. And I didn't mind that either. But I was losing teeth. You know what I mean? Like, and one night I remember drinking and like, oh my God, my teeth started like crumbling in my mouth. And I thought, shit, grandma's like 84 and this is what's happening to her, you know? And then I did another line and had another drink. So I don't know, man. We're just crazy. So, but my brother Freddie, he was really like, he was hearing Jesus on the way home on the radio in his car. It's like, that's some high, man. And he was getting dangerous, too. He was getting very dangerous. Like, he was showing us places in the Bible where it'd be okay to kill us all if we left him. So, it was getting very dangerous. So, his wife went into a shelter, and I went into a recovery home. Yeah, I went into that recovery home, and it was like the best thing I ever did. It was like, pure love, just pure love. And Mary Jones was the house mother, and I got to share an apartment with her, almost just me and her the whole time I was there. And it was like a 3-month commitment, and I stayed for almost 10, I did. And then two of the women in the home, we all got a place together in Huntington Beach. And we took kind of some of the rules from the recovery home as far as like 3 meetings a week you know, being up relapse prevention stuff and being able to call each other on it, right? And because it's difficult living with alkies, you know, and sobriety and somebody slipping and not going to meetings. And it's like, oh, yeah, remember we had the rules 3 a week. We have something to point to. I don't know. It helps. Anyway, yeah, so where was I going with that? Because I was saying I was an alcoholic, and then one time, a few months into my sobriety, I was hanging with my friend Mike, and we were going to treatment centers, doing the service, and going to meetings, and we stopped at his house, and he said, do you want some coffee? And I said, no, I've had enough beer today. And at that instant, like, I felt beer. I mean, I tasted beer in my mouth, and I felt a cold beer in my hand. And it hit me. I'm an alcoholic. Because, like, normal people, they don't taste beer in their mouth if it's not there. And I just don't think so. And so, yeah, that was the day of my first step, really. It was, you know. And I would come, and I would fight the God thing. God wasn't used in a really good way growing up, and I love being able to come to AA meetings and be able to say, and this may offend some of you today, and I'm sorry, but it's, I felt free to say fucking God in the same sentence, you know, and I just, like, you know, and I was told to come back, keep coming back, and AA is crazy, man. So, but they know that we can, like, get sane. And so, yeah. And the women, after the meetings, they would come up and they would share with me. And they would say, what happened to you growing up? That was man's will. That was women's will. Yeah. It's God's will that you made it here. That you're sober today and you have a chance to recover and to heal. And that kind of changed maybe something, maybe. And I'd still grumble out the door. And then somebody said, it would be good for you to get on your knees every morning and every night and read the third step prayer on page 63 of the big book. And I didn't want to, but I did. Every morning, every night. Didn't matter, I don't believe, he said, just do it. It will make a difference. So I started doing that. Just trying to come to believe in something greater because I've been around just, you know, I mean, just so quick I picked up, man, I could die. And I don't want to go back. You know, Yeah, so I started doing that. And then one night I was washing my face in the recovery home. And I soaped my face and I went to fill my hands, to rinse my face. And the thought came to me that my Creator made my hands the perfect size to fill and rinse my face. And I thought, okay, so if my Creator thought that something that's so really unimportant was that important. You know, I saw, how do I say it? That my Creator doing, you know, creating me, it's not that important, that maybe I could turn my will and my life over. Maybe, you know? And then at that moment, like a physical sensation, just, like I didn't know I was even carrying all that fear around. I didn't know I had all that anxiety. It really left me. And that was the evening I did my third step, I guess. Yeah. And I thought, okay, it's all right. And then later on, you know, I think, well, just maybe my will, or maybe just my life, because then if I go crazy with my will, God's got my life covered. I don't know. Because we have to work things out, so I don't know. It just takes some time. It just takes time. It does. And, oh, man. It's so funny to stand up here and tell on myself. I don't know. So, Woo. And I did do my fourth and fifth step. I saved everything I wrote that day in that at that convention center. I did. And then I wrote how my sponsor told me to write. And, and then my friend gave me this tip. He said, like, what he had been doing was every time something made me jerk, you know, like I held a lot of stuff in my stomach. And like I would think of something that I did or something somebody else did that really hurt me and jerked me around. It was something I was going to drink over if I didn't take care of it. Yeah? He said, just jot it down, maybe a name or a place, something to remind you. Don't write about it. Just write it that down so that I could leave it for that day and enjoy that day of sobriety. Yeah, and know I'm going to get to that when I do my fourth step. It helped me so much. So then when I sat down to do that fourth step, you know, I lit the candle, a little ritual, you know, revealed to me everything I need to know, that I need to see about myself and to let go of so that I can move on, yeah? Clean up. And then I'd take out those little pieces of paper, you know? They were not as fun as fortune cookies, but but they were very helpful. Some of them did make me laugh. And and it's funny, you know, because like some of them really hurt that day, but now I'm pulling them out of this pile. All right, okay, you know, because I've heard a hell of a lot worse in the meetings by now, right? Oh my gosh. Remember, I want to tell that story, but I'll tell you, like, you guys have helped me so much, feel so much better about me and my drunkenness. Stick around, man. You'll feel a whole lot better. Some point, telling you, it's the best. This is the best deal in town. It's the best deal in town. It is. Yeah, so that's my fourth and fifth step. And then the sixth and seventh, you know, just looking at, you know, how selfish I am and how everything, it goes back to me, you know. I had a sponsee in Tucson. She sent me a card one time and it said, I thought about you today, and then I opened it and it said, and then I went back to thinking about myself, you know. There's a good alky broad, man. But yeah, there we go. Yep. That's it, man. Oh, man. So, I don't know. And just looking, you know, at those defects of character that get in the way, of me, my sobriety, and the soundness of mind, you know. Because that's, I really believe, you know, that the 12 and 12, you know, it defines insanity as a lack of soundness of mind. Mm-hmm. And so when I have soundness of mind, I'm all right. I am comfortable. I'm comfortable. And I don't need medicine, you know. And yeah, and so as long as I can keep things clean and in that place, you know, I have a real good idea that I don't have to drink or drug again, right? And, you know, and the amends that I did, most people, they didn't think I was an alcoholic, they didn't think I had a problem, you know, and I got to take care of some business, I got to take care of some financial amends, and clean house that way, and it was really good. And, you know, and now I just, you know, I concentrate. I just finished the steps, actually, this year. I've had a really devastating year this year, and it's all right. It's all right. And because I trusted people, and I trusted my higher power, and I'm trying to see what time it is. How much time do I have?
7:45.
I didn't look at the time before I started. Anyway, okay. Anyway, all right. Whew. So, wow. I just, my friend is here, and I'm really grateful. I just totally broke down when I first got here because I ran into a couple of young men that I know in the program because I just do a lot of meetings still, you know, and yeah, and I just grabbed them and took them aside and said, I got a friend coming. I got with a son who's in a little bit of trouble, and I think he might belong here. And yeah, love you, Reggie. Yeah, man. And so he's going to be kind of by me after the meeting, you know, and a few young men can come up and shake this man's hand and hug him with your love. I'd really, I just know that that will make a big difference. Yeah, it's just huge medicine, you know, and maybe he doesn't belong here. I don't know. Only we get to say, I guess, you know, and I just know I tried everything. Like I tried churches, I tried Dianetics, that Scientology or something, and it didn't really work. And I had a big stack of self-help books. I did, but I'd even go to church stoned. Like I couldn't, I couldn't do anything without something in my body. I could not. And I remember losing a best friend at nutrition break in high school. You know. Because a friend of ours, he had LSD, and I was trying to tell Kimberly, you know, and Tina, come on, let's do it. And Tina was mad, but me and Kimberly, we went ahead and did it, you know. And that wasn't very good either that day because, well, we had fun, and then I was supposed to take my little sister to reading class that day. And I got home, so I'm thinking I'm just going to go grab the little sister and drive on over, and then we'll be all right. But when I got home, my mom said, oh, you know what? I need you at home more than I do for you to take OB-GYN. And so, darn. And so I just stayed at home, and she was babysitting. My mom was babysitting a lot of kids. And so I just sat in the living room, watched cartoons with them, and it was a really good time. It was really fun. And this is the stuff that happens with drugs and alcohol that I got to really see was the next day. Now, I didn't, it pissed me off that day, but in my fourth and fifth step. The next day, my mom said I was in a really bad mood. I was really ugly, as she would call it. And she goes, are you on drugs? You know, why are you acting like this? Why can't... Yesterday, you were in such a good mood. You were so friendly with the whole family. The guy wasn't in school today. But what I got to see was that unmanageability, right? It changes us. Like, I didn't have anything the next day, and I'm hungover, and I am grouchy, and I'm wanting it, I'm craving it. I've got to have something else besides where I am and what I'm doing right now, right? And then everybody around me pays the price, right? And that's the kind of stuff I got to see in my fourth and fifth step that really I would never thought of that without a sponsor working that step with me and showing me, you know, how I could think differently about things. That I no longer have to be a victim if I could think of things differently. You know, I've gone to school. I got my bachelor's. I was like 7th, 8th, and 9th grade president of my school. I was. And I got to lead them in the, you know, flag salute during school assembly. I was stoned. And, you know, and I even won the American Legion Leadership Award in 9th grade. And I remember sitting there in the audience bitching about, like, this graduation ceremony needs to be over now so we can go party. And then everybody's yelling my name. Denise, Denise, go up, go up. You won. And I'm like, what the hell did I win? You know? And I'm like, I won the American Legion Scholarship, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I was like, let's just get it on, man. Like, yeah. And what was really cool about winning that award is I was on restriction, but since I won that award, my mom let me go out that night. And see, and there was that incongruency, right? Because, like, I was just playing this, I was this straight-A student, and stonerhead, and I was, it wasn't okay. It was just this big internal fight, and, like, I had a stomach ache ever since I was little, and I remember in junior high school I was prescribed Donatol. It's a low-grade barbiturate, and just take the edge off my stomach, and I haven't had that stomach ache in sobriety. I really have not suffered from that anxious, nervous stomach in sobriety. And I've done a lot of things in sobriety. I really have. I've moved a few times. I moved up to San Francisco and lived there for a couple years, and moved to Flagstaff in 91, and I worked at NAU, and that was a funny thing, you know, because 30 days before I left San Francisco, this guy that was at the Saturday morning meeting, who I was just in love with for like 2 years, 30 days before I'm moving, asked me for coffee or something sometime. And you know what I loved about living in San Francisco was I said, you know, my sister, she's riding on, riding in the Dykes on bikes tomorrow at the Pride Parade. You want to go with me? And he's like, yeah, let's go, you know? And we did. And it was a good time. And we hung out and we fell in love. And I say that in AA love, you know? Yeah. So he tried to come see me, and I tried to go see him, and one time he came, and I was trying to get into NAU, to get a job at NAU, and it happened to be that the temp agency that runs through NAU needed me at an NAU assignment. And that's why I went through that temp agency. And it was the weekend he was coming, and I said, I'm so sorry, but I have to do this, you know. And he was really bent out of shape because, you know, he came all the way there, here, to see me, and I had work. And I remember those 2 days just working my butt off and really just praying, thy will be done, thy will be done. Because I was really disappointed too. I mean, this beautiful man's at my house, and, you know, and I'm having to do this. I'm trying to do the right, next right thing, right? And be grown up and be sober, and this is what I wanted, and it's just... But you know what happened? I swear. So I did those 2 days, and then the next week I got a call from the College of Ed, and they said, we just called HR to see if they knew anybody that they could recommend for a position we have open. And they said, you did a temp assignment and you were fantastic. We'd like you to apply for this position. And I got hired, you know. And so it paid off and pretty quick. And that's how things have been here for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I look for the signs. I just look for the goodness. You know, I really do. And I just try to do what's right, what's next. Try to be grown up. You know, Penny, my sponsor, who is really my sponsor who I really did the most work with, she used to say, you know, we put the plug in the jug, and then we've got to grow up, right? You know, we have to grow up. That's what sobriety is. It's maturity. And, I just rolled my eyes. But I did. I just kind of grew up, and And it's not our bad. It really isn't. And I don't know. I'm grateful to be here. I'm really grateful to be sober. And I get so much hope and so much love and just unconditional love. I've learned how to love here by being loved by you. Yeah. And by allowing myself to be loved. I just never thought I could allow myself to be loved like I have been able to be since I've been sober. And it's a blessed gift. It's just a blessed gift. And to just not be too judgmental, not be too critical of myself, of others, have some soundness of mind, work the steps over and over. I tried to leave town in November, start a business with my sister and a friend in Albuquerque. And I just like, I left everything. I retired early from NAU and just ran after my dream. And it fell apart in like 8 days. It's like, this can't be happening, you know? But my sister, she has been sober 27 years. But she just did AA the first year. And then that was all. And then she did a lot of therapy. And so she wasn't quite right in her head. She was, you know, a week before, you know, she was when the day we got there. I don't know what happened. I really don't know what happened to my sister. I don't think her intention was to screw it all up. Really don't. But she kind of did. And she kind of really did. So, like, this is my sister. So I finally just worked the steps and I wrote an amends letter because I got to see, okay, if I had planned better. If I would have, you know, said, you know what, we need to meet a few times. Go over our business plan. And let's assign, you know, tasks. Who's going to do what in this business? Blah, blah, blah. You know, really try to see what I could have done differently. I could have made sure my retirement stuff was all intact and all done. And I had the cash in hand when I got there. I did not do these things. This is what I wrote in the letter. And she wrote back and she said, interesting letter of amends. You said nothing about me in it. It was a men's letter. I was just sharing with you what I did wrong and maybe what I could have do different next time, right? So I don't know. That's my sister. Everything is still about her, yeah? Like it was for me before I came in here. Many of us, you know, and sometimes it's still my first thought. But what's so beautiful is that how I've learned to change that. And I think my studies, like I have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree now, and don't get into debt. Do not get into debt. Like, pay attention to what the heck you guys are borrowing when you're going to school, if you ever choose to go to school. I'm serious. Like, that's my experience, strength, and hope today. Dead serious, okay? Because when you get out of there, you don't know what you want to do yet, yeah? And you there's so much freedom when you walk out of there without the debt. So be careful. Anyway, I had to say that. Still forgiving myself on that one, I guess. Anyway, I'm almost finished. Yeah, so I was like, oh, I just want to tell you how this has affected, like, even my classwork. Like, we had this assignment. We had to write this paper from three perceptions, right? We had to write about something, looking at it three different ways. And I aced that paper. And it was, what was even better was it was how easy it was, right? Because what I've learned here and how to think about a situation a few different ways. Pick the best one for everybody involved. Yeah? So thank you all for letting me share tonight. And I love you all. Have a great time.